Hello, cyclocross friends, and hello, mountain bike friends. And welcome to episode 71 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we are joined in the basement by Taylor Jones and also on the phone by Kevin Hayes. And we're doing our first of what I think is going to be a regular off-season segment on Crosshairs Radio, where we're talking about the mountain bike world, specifically cross-country racing, XC racing, XCO racing, which is the UCI version of that at the highest level, the World Cup races. We're giving you a sort of a rundown on all the players to watch, how to see the coverage, and why, as a cyclocross fan, you should also be a cross-country mountain bike fan. A lot of similarities between the racing, between the personalities, and I think if you guys get into it, you're really going to dig it, and it's going to sort of scratch that itch for the missing cyclocross during the off-season. As always, we are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ is a life insurance company. Actually, they're life insurance. What they do is they are going to get you life insurance. They're going to go out and find the companies that have the best life insurance, get you hooked up with them, get you the best deals, get you the best rates. What they're looking for is healthy people, for cyclists, people who ride 50 miles a day, a week. You're going to be given, you know, discounts if you have a low resting heart rate. Also, you can save between 5% and 10%. It's life insurance is something everybody should be looking into, and Health IQ is making it easy to get that, and also making it easy for cyclists and giving you advantages that just your common folk aren't getting. Would love for you to go to healthiq.com/cxhairs. And fill out a survey, answer a couple questions, get in touch with Health IQ. That helps us, lets them know that you are a listener and you are following through and supporting the sponsors that support the show. Also want you all to go and check out the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. If you haven't heard yet, we got some new shows out there that are going to come on board later in the year. But right now, our latest one, We Got to Hang Out. Really fun conversations every week. Go check out that show, Dirt Field Recordings. Last one with Jono Coulter, who is the team co-owner and also manager of the Supermint, Hagens Berman Supermint women's pro cycling team. Him and Lindsay sit down, have a really great conversation, and I think people are missing out on that, so go check out that one. And after you're done with that, by the time you hear this, on actually coming up on Thursday, the next one with Ted King will be out, so go check out the Dirt Field Recordings as well. Hey, the Slow Ride Podcast, I got to go over there and sit in for Tim Hayes, the super rookie, and that was a ton of fun, so go check out our Flanders episode on the Slow Ride Podcast, and go to the Wide Angle Podium Network and become a member. That's the bottom line here. I'd love to see more and more of you all actually join up and become members. We need more of you, so go do it. WideAnglePodium.com. Okay, let's go talk some mountain bike with Kevin and Taylor, and let's do that right now. We are here for episode 71 of Crosshairs Radio, and we're shifting into, I don't think we even have a name yet, like mountain bike radio. XC radio.
Mountain bike radio is already a podcast. All actually right.
Well, the better mount. No, we can't start a rivalry before we even like have episode one under our belts.
Let's call us Make Cross Country Mountain Biking Great Again.
I think you mean XCO.
XCO. XCO hairs.
XCO hairs. There we go.
XCO. How about XCO radio? We can do that.
Okay, that works.
Yeah.
That's a funny way to pronounce XC Eliminator.
But that's...
No, well, XCE is the Eliminator.
XCE, yeah.
XCO is the
Olympic
cross country.
It was a joke. Yeah, it was supposed to be a joke, Kevin.
All right, man. So we're here with Taylor Jones and Kevin Hayes, who've been on Crosshairs Radio before, talking about cyclocross. But we thought that it'd be good to sort of fill in the off season with some mountain biking coverage, and especially the cross-country coverage. You know, we got the World Cup season, which is going to start in about a month. And for everybody that likes cyclocross, I think that there is and has not gotten into the world of mountain biking and maybe scared off that it's not going to be as exciting, they're missing out. And that cross-country mountain biking these days, the way it's run, is becoming more and more like a cyclocross race. You know, and I think cyclocross, too, with, you know, bikes and everything else, it's getting more technical as well. And these two sports are starting to merge. So, for instance, cross-country used to be really much longer, like three-hour races, right?
Yep.
And now we're down to 90-minute races. Yep. 6, 7, 8 laps of a course, so really fan friendly. Spectators can get in there. You got Red Bull, which is going to be similar to the coverage you're getting on Sporza. You're getting to see all the races there. It's no longer, you know, in most instances, you know, sometimes it happens just like it does in a cross race. You'll get one guy or one woman out there and they'll just dominate and just run away with it. But a lot of times here, you're getting dynamic racing. You're getting two or three people out at the front battling it out. You got mechanicals and flats that work into it. So it's really, I think if you like cyclocross, you will enjoy this World Cup cross-country racing. That's I think, going to be our main focus. But on top of that, we're also going to talk about the return of the Eliminator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we may touch on downhill, but, you know, downhill is sort of like a spectacle. If you ever get to see it live, it's awesome. It's fun to watch a couple runs on Red Bull, but it's I don't know. You know, anything you're racing against a clock,
I'm going to make the argument that cross country is more exciting to watch than downhill.
I will be with you on that argument 100%.
I'm there.
And then, you know, we'll also touch on the U.S. U.S. scene, or sadly what remains of it. Is that okay to say?
Hey, quick question. Who's our U.S. national champion?
I know. I can answer that. Stefan Ettinger.
Yeah, and is he going to race in Europe at all?
Don't know. I guess he didn't even race Fontana this past weekend.
Yeah, I guess the U.S.
Guys, yeah. According to USA Cycling Mountain Bike National results, it's Howard Grotz.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. Ettinger, I'm wrong.
Which proves the point.
All right.
Stefan Ettinger got fifth last year.
But he was the champ the year before, so
that's probably true. For sure. Grotz sounds more familiar.
Okay, fine. Well, whatever. I screwed that one up. Here's a better question for that. Well, I mean, this is something we can talk about more generally too, but, you know, for a sport that was, most would argue or agree, kind of invented in this country, I would say that the, you know, you've got to look pretty deep on the result sheet at a World Cup race to find the top American, and the top North American is 9 times out of 10 Canadian.
Who was the last winner overall of the World Cup from the U.S. men's?
I mean, it's not really fair because I already have the Wikipedia page open.
Okay, Taylor, you're on the hook.
Men's World Cup overall winner.
Think back to your texts earlier today.
That's Tomac. Has to be Tomac. So what year was that, like 95 probably?
Nope. He was the first ever in 1991.
91, okay, right.
He was the first and only.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Actually, I have that he was the second.
Really?
Yeah, 1990 in Durango, Ned Overend was first, beating out Tim Frischknecht.
That's world championship.
Yeah, I'm talking about
He's talking about World Cup overall.
Yeah.
You're talking about World Cup. So.
Yeah. Series. Talking about the series. We knew world championship. Yeah. Tomac, he got second for 92 and 93, but yeah, that was the first and last overall U.S. winner. So the big stars now. We'll start on the men's side. But if you're just getting into this sport, who are you watching?
Nino. It's got to be Nino.
Switzerland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone from Switzerland.
Why Nino? What is it about? If I want to be a Nino Scherter fan,
just watch any video that he's ever put out of him just going on a ride, that's all you need. 5 minutes, you'll be a Nino Schurter fan. Because the dude can just ride his bike and do everything. And I think the big thing that separates him from a lot of the other guys like Absalon or like Maxime Marot is the guy has crazy skills. Like his technical ability, he'll go ride a downhill bike, you know, instead of just training on the road.
Yeah. So for our cyclocross fans out there or our cyclocross friends out there, we're gonna say Nino Schurter is Matthew Vanderpoel. If we want to just go to contemporary.
Sure.
Okay, I'll take it.
Got the skill. He can't go over a jump without like crossing over and tail whip and yeah. Like even if the race is on the lines, you know, the same thing that Vanderpoel gets all the criticism for, he does. Nobody says a word. It's just how he rides a bike. Like he can't do it without putting a little flair in everything he does.
Yeah.
All right. So his biggest rivalry, really, you know, a guy who started winning World Cup overall since 2006.
Julian Absalon.
So if we're give me the rundown on Absalon.
The guy is just super solid. He's been multiple time world champion, multiple time World Cup overall champion, multiple time French national champion.
Yeah, two-time gold medal winner.
Olympic champion. I mean, I forget how many World Cup races the guy has won. He's super consistent.
Yeah,
always has been.
Five world championships, seven overall World Cups, five European championships.
Been around for a long time. Is just good at everything. You know, I would say tends to maybe do better on courses that have a little bit more extended climbing, which is tough because the current iteration of the XCO format, the courses don't tend to be that long, so there's not a ton of extended climbing like it used to be, you know, a decade ago, where you would have these like insane ski slope climbs where you would just start at the bottom and climb all the way to the top. We don't really see that much anymore, if at all.
So if I'm gonna again bring this into cyclocross, he's my Wout Van Aert.
Yeah, he's the Wout Van Aert.
Yeah,
he's gonna be more steady, just stronger than anybody out there. If you want a good place to start with Absalon, just go back to the first World Cup last year in Cairns, Australia, where he flatted in the first lap, dropped all the way back to middle of 30s. He's actually riding with Matthew Vanderpoel, who's just like hanging out, you know, trying to qualify for the Olympics, and you know, gave up that dream a couple weeks later. And was he 3 minutes down? He was
pretty far because it was like the first time past the technical zone, so it was, I don't know, within the first 10 or 15 minutes of racing.
Yeah, so he was a couple minutes down. Well, and was able to
and the other thing with this format of mountain bike racing, I mean, there are technical zones where you can actually, it's not like if you go out and ride in the woods with your friends, you get a flat, you got to fix it yourself. You know, you can go, they'll change your wheel. You can't change a bike like in a cross race, but you can change a wheel. And watching the mechanics try to change a wheel with a through axle is painful.
So, which you know, sort
you
of ties
feel very badly for them.
Ties into what we may be seeing down the road on the road, and one of the
guys are just gonna take bikes.
Knocks against, yeah, where there's gonna be no more wheel changes on the road once everybody goes disc and through axles, because it's gonna take way too long to actually change out a wheel. Well, they'll probably do what Bonin did. on bike change number three or four where they gave him his first bike back, and you knew it was because they were probably changing out his wheels, that rear wheel for instance, and had to take the whole bike apart to be able to do it and get it back for him. But yeah, so that is a good point, that you have a mechanic, you know, in these World Cup races, you have a mechanic, you have a soigneur who are working for you in the pits. Unlike cyclocross, they can't just grab another bike. They have to do all the work on the bike that they have. They can change out wheels, so they'll be in there in the pits with, you know, three, four, five, six spare wheels in La Bresse this year. It was really a race of attrition where racers were running out of wheels. There were so many flats, and so it's definitely your technical zone and your pit crews definitely play a role in there. That was with that first race, was that Absalon got that horrible wheel change and that sort of sent him back. But he didn't win. He ended up second or third,
yeah, something like that.
But making up like 3 minutes just because there were huge climbs in that race. So,
Speaking of the similarities of getting to Crofts, you see all these guys starting to run tubulars on their mountain bike now, too.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, in Nino Scherter's camp is Newhouse, yeah, the Dugas owner,
Richard Newhouse.
Richard Newhouse, who sort of plays around as a mechanic for them.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like also all you need to know about Nino Scherter. Like, if you're a big enough name in the sport that you can get Dugas to custom make you 27.5 tubulars, you're a pretty big deal.
But not big enough that you still don't have to pay for them.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Because Dugas does not give away tires. So, all right, Kevin. So we have our Van Aert, we have our Vanderpool. So who's yeah,
okay.
who's the other guy? Who's the Powells? Who's the Lauren Swick? Who's that third wheel?
I got a good pick, but you go.
I wanted to do the Sven Nys.
Yeah.
I wanted to go with Christopher Salzman.
Ooh, okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah, guy that's just still around and still crushing it.
Another Swiss guy.
I would say, I will throw out two potential names. I would say one, Bart Brunchens.
Okay, all right.
Because, yeah, okay, the guy.
That's Powell's right there.
First ever Olympic champion.
Yeah.
Owns and runs a professional team now, but still does race too. Like, he's won more Cape Epics than anyone, granted, in the Masters category. But I mean, Bill, you know, from having seen him firsthand at World Cups, like, he could go out there tomorrow and toe the line.
Oh yeah. He's doing a commentary and then also like putting in hot laps with the top of the field.
But I'll throw one more name too. Miguel Martinez, because he's still out there at like 41 racing World Cups. And this is a guy who was, before he raced pro on the road with MAPE, you know, he was winning World Cups back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Well, and so he's still out there.
I'm going to put the guys who hopefully will give those two a run for their money this year. And I'm thinking of two guys in particular. One, the easy one, Yaroslav Kulhavi.
Yep.
I was leaving that one for you to say.
Thank you. Thanks for leaving me the low-hanging fruit. Kulhavi, a guy who, if we go back to the overall, won it in 2011 and is always right there. And he's usually the last guy dropped by that leading pair. And if he can put it all together, he can definitely still win some races.
And there have been more words spoken about the angle of this guy's saddle than any other professional cyclist ever.
Yeah, just looking at a picture of it, most people would not approve.
You watch the coverage of every World Cup, and that's all they can talk about.
For those wondering, that's Morty, who is given his 2 cents. I can let my dogs down here too if we just want to let them talk for a while. We'll have XDO dog talk.
I'll be right back.
Well, other than Kulhavi, Maxime Marot,
yeah.
Yeah. This is good with the French names because you can just.
I mean, there's also like guys the past few years who've been super, super consistent. Maxime Marot, Stefan Tempier, those guys have been super, super solid. I mean, you have like Marot is interesting because he's a huge gear masher, like always pushes a huge gear, which you look like his riding style versus someone like Absalon, it's very different, but you know, the guy gets the results. He's always there, always in the top 3, top 5. And same Stefan Tempier, a guy who goes out, and pushes really hard at the beginning of the races. He's oftentimes the guy who's out front setting the pace, and still, you know, ends up collecting some solid results. And then, I mean, there's also...
Well, new team from Merote this year as well, so that'll be an interesting change for him, see if it sort of gives him even more of a spark.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big... That was a big off-season switch. He's racing for Cannondale now, mm-hmm. was racing for Bianchi. Yeah. Well, and actually, they kind of switched because Marco Fontana left Cannondale
right.
and is now at Bianchi this year.
Okay.
So...
Yeah, that part I didn't realize.
Speaking of Marco, then, does that mean he brings the baggies with him?
And the visor?
And the visor, yes.
Celeste baggies? I don't know about that.
He can make it work.
Yeah. No, the funny thing is we've talked about all these guys,
yeah.
and there are probably a dozen Swiss riders that you could talk about who, I mean, you look at the results from the World Championships, like how far did you have to go to find a non-Swiss or French rider? This past year, pretty wild.
Especially this past year. And the one interesting thing about this year is that we are at the beginning, more than, we don't see this in cyclocross. Cyclocross isn't an Olympic sport. XCO, the O stands for Olympic. And what happens is that is still a huge goal. You have some sports where going to the Olympics, not that big of a deal. In mountain biking, it's pretty much the only goal. So... it won't be now for a couple years, like we'll have, because we're just in the first year of it. But then, you know, as you get closer, 3-4 years down the road, it's going to start ramping up. And this really played out with what Taylor was saying with these Swiss riders, where they would be 6 out of the top 10, but only 3 of them were going to the Olympics. So it was this huge battle of the best in the world, just basically in a bare knuckle brawl every race to try to get those spots for the Olympics. So it's now that that's over, it really is going to change the dynamic, I think, of what the races are this year, where they're going to be a little more wide open. People are going to be willing to take more chances just because the stakes aren't as high.
Yeah, they're Swiss. how about the non-Swiss? So, like, how about the Australians? They have a couple guys that peek in here and there.
Yeah, Dan McConnell, who was on Trek last year, now really doing a grassroots team, him and Beck Henderson together. But I think that's... I think he's going to come out of the gate strong, and we're gonna see Dan up there near the front again this year.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I'm just looking at in the top 14 from Worlds last year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So half of the top 14 were either French or Swiss.
That's, yeah, crazy.
And the top American finisher was Kevin.
The Steven Eniger.
Wrong. Howard Grotz.
Howard Grotz.
This is the No Love for Howard Grotz show. Okay, let's move over to the women. Just and talk about the women's field.
Who is also sometimes more exciting than the men's field.
Yeah.
Just
like cyclocross, you know, that there's definitely a lot of excitement in these women's races.
Seems to be a lot of times there's more parity in the women's fields.
You also have things that happen in the women's field that happen in women's racing across the board, like Pauline Ferrand-Prévot will show up, race for a while, win a world championship, and then sort of not be seen on the scene at all because she's racing road at the same time she's racing mountain bikes.
She did that this week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I knew she was. So she raced both on the road and on the mountain bike. I saw her in the mountain bike.
Yeah, she raced. She raced the Flanders? Tour of Flanders. Nice. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
She finished top 10, I think, too.
That's good. That's good to see her back. She had definitely had a tough year or so of healing and recuperation. So yeah, it's going to be fun to see if she shows up for these World Cup races to see what she can do. I know she was in there last year, not having a lot of fun. I mean, really, I think still hurt, still recovering, not in the best fitness, and it was not turning the laps that she wanted to. But you know, there are definitely, you know, go back to the Swiss again. Yolanda Neff is probably the name that everybody talks about. She also she was injured for part of last year, beginning of last year, came back, put together some good races, won the overall World Cup in 2014, 2015. Still pretty young too, mm-hmm. isn't she? Yeah, yeah. She's still got a lot of, she's still a kid. Another young rider, Annika Langvid. Current world champion. She's put in an incredible year this year. On the other side of the age spectrum, Catherine Pendrell, Canadian, who won the overall World Cup, and then her country mate, Emily Batty, also had a really strong year, some podiums in some World Cups and World Championship, and then also third overall in the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, also to a name that people from the world of cyclocross will know, Katarina Nash, mm-hmm. Always out there.
Eva Lechner.
Always super consistent. Yeah, both of them. So
plus, they're all like on the same team. You got Georgia Gould, Eva Lechner, Katarina Nash. I mean,
that's, I'm assuming Georgia's not going to be racing this year.
Oh, is she done with us now?
Maybe she can get a baby seat to mount on the handlebar.
She's pretty pregnant right now, so she may not.
Okay.
You still have, you know, just legends in the women's side, like Gunrita Dahl is still going.
Arina Kalantieva still around, been out there for a long time.
Yeah, so that's definitely...
Sabine Spitz.
Yeah.
And from the American side, as far as, you know, medalists and stuff, go Leah Davison.
Yep.
Leah Davison with an incredible couple years, you know, up there in the World Cup in 2015, up there in Worlds this year. So, yeah. So that's pretty much the overview of the men and women just in your cross-country, European cross-country World Cup. Mainly Europeans, I guess more North Americans. I guess the women have more North Americans. Those are the ones to watch. The nice thing also that what you have is you have Red Bull, which I've never actually ingested a Red Bull.
But it makes me almost want to.
I have a theory.
But yes. Okay, well, Red Bulls. Hang on, and I'll get to your theory. But what I will say is I'm a huge supporter of them because of the coverage that they give you for all of mountain biking, and it's top-notch, and it's something that's not geo-restricted, so you can watch it for free pretty much on any device that you have in the U.S. And
They have that whole channel.
Yeah, they have a whole channel. You can go there right now and watch last year's races, last year's highlights. All right, what's the theory? Taylor's theories. This is like Klein Corner.
Like
this
Klein
is Taylor's,
Corner. Okay.
Taylor's theories.
My theory is, and one I've never seen, you will never see any cyclist who is sponsored by Red Bull drink a Red Bull. They might hold one. They might open one.
What about like downhillers?
No.
Nope.
Different. That's a different breed. That's a different breed. I thought we already determined that.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't. That was a bad exception.
Cross country.
Endurance.
I don't know. Do those guys, I feel like those guys are like the marathon guys.
Yeah.
No, I don't know that that's.
I'll add some of them this year.
There you go. Yeah. So Kevin, let's talk about the evolution of Kevin Hayes. First question.
How many pair of baggy shorts do you own?
That's a good first question.
Two.
Okay. what's the frequency when you're out riding that you're wearing them?
Depends who I'm riding with. It's like a thing, you know, there's a lot more baggies down in Tennessee than there are up north.
Are you wearing, how about a fanny pack?
I don't have a fanny pack yet.
I'm sorry, hip pack.
everyone else around me has a fanny pack. I do not yet.
Okay.
So I'm all strong.
Yet. Notice the yet at the end of there. Okay, second question. When is the last time you rode your road bike?
Last week. You know it rains down here, okay?
Okay.
It's not Moab, Bill. Come on.
When is the last time you rode your cyclocross bike?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I raced cyclocross once last year.
How was that? Where did you do that?
I did that in Boone, North Carolina. It was actually a great race. Taylor knows all about those. They're great.
I do know all about those. Those are great races.
Yeah. What's the scene like? Like, how many people are there? What's the...
Oh, it's Mavra size. It's a pretty big size. I mean, I did the 3-4 field, and it was a over 50-person field. It was solid. Actually, you know, it's probably the 3 field.
Third question. What can you give me the name and the line of the train that is going by your window right now?
Oh, man. So I have lots of trains that go by my window right now. I'm sorry. I'm a very noisy place.
I love it. I don't want any changes. You got between Morty and the trains. It's perfect.
I have a train that goes past my house, like, I don't know, 5 blocks away. So that's Knoxville for you.
I just reenacted a Space Horse commercial over here. Kind of shotgunned a LaCroix all over my lap.
Oh, man. Well, let me tell you guys a little bit more about baggies down here.
I don't think I got the bike right.
All right, go. Tell us.
Yeah, baggies.
Educate
go.
Us.
All right, so as it turns out, you know, I mean, I always told you this, Taylor. Like, nobody does that thing where you just ride up hills for a long period of time and bomb downhills. Like, that's not the way people actually ride, you know, like enduros and stuff. Well, okay. It turns out there's a lot of people that actually do ride that way. And there's actually something to it. So, I mean, so, you know, what you do nowadays, down here at least, is on the weekends, we all hop in a van, go out to Pisgah, we ride up the mountain for an hour, and then you bomb down in like 20 minutes. And that's it.
And you shuttle back to the top and do it again, or?
Oh, no, you have to ride up there. I mean,
that's good. See, I'm fine with that. As long as you're riding up to the top. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, but that also, you know, means that you still have to have a reasonably capable bike for climbing up hills.
Yeah, I mean, you're mostly, it's not like you're like out of the saddle crushing it most of the time. So you're kind of just soft pedaling up to the top. But I mean, you're also talking like an hour climb slash like pushing a bike sometimes. So, I mean, it's pretty exhausting, I'll be honest.
So have you gotten a new bike? Are you like full enduro now?
No, actually, I stepped back. I got a single-speed hardtail.
Whoa, look at you.
Which, for some reason, I've signed up to do the Pisgah 111 on.
Nice. So, when is that?
That is in the end of May. So okay. I have roughly 2 months to figure out how I ride that bike for 111 kilometers over the mountains of Pisgah.
So how are you training for that? Lots of trainer time?
Currently, I'm sitting and talking to you guys.
Well, that's good. This is more of a, it's getting you in the mindset. We're working on the mental game.
That's right. Yeah. No, you know, every weekend we go out and we try to ride Pisgah as much as possible now. So Pisgah's like 2 hours from us here. So it's kind of, you know, the people talk about Pisgah a lot. It's actually really a magical place. I've never mountain biked anywhere like it before.
You're getting rolled eyes from Taylor over here.
Oh, what's wrong, Taylor?
Oh, no, nothing. I mean, I don't disagree. I've spent
I think it was more of a jealousy than
spent
a,
many,
than
many
a,
hours, many, you know, yeah. Riding in Pisgah when I used to live in North Carolina. So,
well, you can come down and do it again.
Yeah, I could. That's true. You know, that would presume that I don't work on weekends. But anyway,
I get it. It's almost like people out there knew that a Crosshairs radio was being recorded. I just got a voicemail message on the hotline.
Oh, go to the hotline.
Should I play it?
I hope that has nothing to do with mountain biking.
I'll bet it doesn't.
I hope it's Tim.
Let me see if I could actually, if it's one worth. I had a guy who didn't get, or wanted to exchange a shirt. And he left me a voicemail.
That's fantastic. What, did he like send you 5 emails and the response wasn't quick enough?
Oh, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Oh, here we go. This is going to be perfect.
All right, let's go.
We can hear it. Hang on.
Hey, Bill, it's Nate from Rochester. Hey, I have a question for the new mountainbikehairs.com about your UCI mountain bike coverage. I want to know why bike changes are not legal in World Cup races. It's totally ridiculous. You can switch bikes in road races. You can switch bikes in cross races. I don't care what they do in time trials. Why is this still a thing, right? Like, seeing Nino come in with a flat, and then they got to pop the through axle out, throw a new front wheel in, takes 3 minutes before he's back on the race. His day's over. It's silly, and I think they should change the rule, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Nate from Rochester, you are my favorite person in the world right now. I mean, didn't even put anything out about the helpline, and he's right there with the mountain bike question.
It's like he never left.
I'm just glad he called.
Yeah.
It's good to hear from him.
Yeah. So I'm supposed to answer this.
Yep.
I am going to, theory number two of the night. I will say that it's probably them trying to hold on to some, history of the sport of being self-sufficient. Because prior to the advent of the tech zone, you were on your own. Like, if you got a flat, either you DNF'd or you put a tube in your tire and kept going. So I'm going to say that it has something because, we all know that cycling, pro cycling loves its history and sticking to ridiculous things like no disc brakes on the road or whatever. I'm going to say that it has something to do with that.
Well, it's even, hang on. I didn't mean to play that again. I'm going to edit that out. old shoulder move. I'd even add to that wasn't there also some pushback from riders? We see sort of in cyclocross as well, where it was an arms race at that point, and they wanted to make it so it wasn't completely out of control, where didn't have two mechanics in the technical zone. Or each technical zone, some of them have, one at the top of the mountain, one at the bottom, and, three, four different bikes that they could switch out. And it just became, more and more the bigger teams will be able to have that much of an advantage.
I'm sure that has something to do with it as well.
I can tell you right now, the bigger teams still have a much bigger, better advantage.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
What do you think, Kevin?
You know what? I didn't hear the question at all, but I have a question for you. How big are the differences in the teams when you go to those World Cups?
What do you mean? What
like the support teams, like between like some of those, between Nino Scherzer and say, I don't know, somebody like down 15th, 16th place. I mean, does everyone show up with huge support?
Well, we look at Trek as being, one of the biggest programs in the world, and the Trek Factory Racing team does an awesome job, but they are just little fish as far as these other cross-country mountain bike teams.
I remember
go.
You telling me that the Brenchens,
yeah,
like Brenchens Superior CST, like their setup is just insane.
They were I think he bought a former F1 truck setup. So, and it just...
It's like an 18-wheeler.
Yeah, so it's an 18-wheeler, and it just blows out into this huge tent that just comes, that just starts with the truck, and it's got... I mean, it's just this beautiful setup, and he's got, like, these dudes... Like, I've been in the weight room, because I want to, be as big as the Brenchens guys, who are, setting everything up in there.
Like Belgian truck drivers chain smoke all day.
Completely. Yeah. That's exactly
perfect.
Exactly who they are. And they're definitely, teams like that, Specialized has their huge setup. But as big as all of these cross-country teams are, every single one of them is dwarfed by the downhill team setups, which are insane. I mean, they're just, they got living rooms set up there and kitchens and like little places for naps. And it's bonkers how big the downhill setups are.
Those downhill guys, they're picky people. They want it all.
Yeah. Well, got to keep them in Red Bull or Monster or
whatever the energy drink of choice is.
That's right.
So, okay. So here's the next question then. Is cross country back on the upstream or the downstream now? I mean, are we seeing a rise of cross country again, or are we kind of slowly seeing the demise?
Well, I can tell you locally that even today I saw some complaints from, from some parents looking for races for their kids that there was nothing in the Mid-Atlantic except for 9 or 12 hour races. And there's no longer any
cross
country races.
The Mass Super Series has a whole half the races are all cross country.
That's the thing. These are folks who are spoiled like we are in cyclocross and think and the road scene here, thinking that you can just get to a race in an hour or under, and that should be all you need to travel. And I know there are many people across the country who think that's insane, who are going 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a weekend to race. But
I can tell you from the last month's Mabra conference call.
This would be the Mid-Atlantic Association.
Mid-Atlantic Bicycle Racing Association, which is the local association for D.C., Northern Virginia, Maryland, and Delaware. This is a point of much topic and contention with the board. So,
wait, isn't West Virginia supposed to be in Mabra too?
That's also a point of contention and conversation, as is
here, in comparison's sake, we don't have any cross-country races. As far as much mountain biking as we don't have down here, we have plenty of endurance races. We have plenty of very long Pisgah races. But you're not going to do any hour-and-a-half races down here anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing in this area. And honestly, like, I mean, as someone who, that's how I got into the sport, was through mountain bike racing, through racing cross-country. And as somebody who did that for a long time, and I used to, you know, as a junior, would travel over the country, race Norba Nationals. I feel like that, you know, in a lot of senses is dead. I mean, there is like a U.S. Cup, which has races all around. There's a, you know, Kenda Cup up in the Northeast. But, I mean, I think like your USA Cycling sanctioned cross-country series, like we maybe knew 8, 10, 12, 15 years ago, I don't know that that's really coming back. I think a big part of it is, I mean, that's, well, for sure what happened with Greenbrier, which was one of the longest running cross-country races on the East Coast. I mean, for 20, 25 years, I mean, they canceled it because it just kept getting too expensive.
Yep.
It was increasingly more and more expensive. And that was, in this area, was the only race that was, it was a nationals qualifier. In so years past, it had been a world qualifier.
Talk to Kerry Werner, it was a world qualifier.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a race that, you know, the had been around for decades, and that race is now gone, and it's because it was getting too expensive.
Yeah, and it's part of it was because they wanted to stay in USA Cycling, and that just sort of jacked up their. I'm sorry, USA Cycling folks. That's what I heard. I don't know the reality of that, but it was also the numbers were down, and you did it a couple years. Did you feel like numbers kept shrinking every year, Kevin?
I mean, the year I won the Mabra Championship in my category, I think I beat maybe 3 or 4 people.
Well, I will say this in the defense of Greenbrier and small fields is that because it was a nationals qualifier, the way that the age categories had to be structured, the fields were artificially small.
110 podiums. 110 podiums. That's what I had to call that day.
That used to be really good. Like they did I'd raced it a couple times as like, I think it was either a 4 or 6 hour marathon race they did there.
Yeah.
That was a really good one. I mean, that's a really good course for like a, you know, medium length marathon race.
But I think the culture also has moved over to not even just solo, you know, marathoning, but just relay.
Yep.
Races and teams and 9 and 12 and 24 hour races.
You look at like 50 and 100 mile stuff, like the NUE series, that's huge.
And that's true as well.
NUE series is huge. Big. And that's, I think, a big part of it is because they're for a top level people in each category, it's a competitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also more of like a mass start type event and event experience.
And it can be a bucket. Eat list.
Right, because that's how people want to ride their bikes. They want to go out and go ride somewhere unique. I don't think they want to
ride all day.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you go and you get there early, you camp, you eat, you spend the whole time. It's a whole gig. So,
I guess the endurance, the hardcore top end, you know, aerobic, anaerobic endurance athlete that can go out there and just crush it for 90 minutes is no longer riding a mountain bike or not in the same.
No, numbers. I think they're doing cyclocross now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look at we already said Kerry Werner. I mean, he's a perfect example of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think he would tell you because the scene was not what it used to be, and he saw more promise in cyclocross.
I mean, I think also if you're someone who's trying to make your living through riding and racing a bike, you're going to go where the opportunity is and where the money is.
Yeah.
And if that's not in traditional cross-country racing, why, you know, why try to stick it out if you can go somewhere else? I mean, you look at guys like Howard Grotz, like Steven Ettinger. I mean, they're the best guys in this country, and they're going to Europe and they're racing there. But I would say that, you know, the difference between first place and 15th place at a World Cup is pretty big.
Yes.
I mean, the time gaps can be very large. So it's not like a cross race where it's 20 seconds or something. I mean, it's the difference between, like, you know, when Wout attacks and decides it's go time and the group for seventh place is 3 minutes back. It's like that, but bigger.
You'll even see it to the point, you know, men's and women's field, you know, you'll see it a lot in the practice rounds, but then in the race as well. There are parts of the course that people racing in World Cups can't ride. You'll get the front end of the group, and they're not slowing down. They're not touching their brakes. And it's like these super tight, it's these insane features. And then you have in that same race just mere humans who are better than anybody else, but still not at that level. And they're dismounting. They're, you know, running down sections. And it's just insane to see
Yeah, I think that kind of goes to when you talk about people who don't think the cross-country racing is exciting, I think they just need to get on a cross-country race bike and then try to go down those exact same features. It's not like you're doing this stuff on a downhill bike. I mean, this stuff's hard.
Yeah, it's treacherous just walking around there, much less riding your bike. If you've made it this far into this show and you're still interested, I talked about that Cairns race last year, but if you can find the Le Bresse race, the downhill part of Le Bresse is just fantastic to watch. There are a couple features there. That's just one's just a big rock drop. The other one's this another rock garden that's pretty much straight down. But you have three separate lines that guys are choosing and trying to pass each other on, and the women as well. And it's just, and they all meet up again into the single track. So it's really, really dynamic, really fun to watch, and just treacherous. I mean, you can watch Yolanda Neff bite it pretty hard, and I think she still got up and won the race. So
yeah.
So it's the skill level needed. It definitely isn't just an engine. You got to be able to handle your bike to race.
And I think
that goes into
the strategy a little too, right? I mean, it's not like cross race where it's just kind of an open lane. You have to kind of devise when you're going to hit the single track, when you're going to hit the downhills versus the climbs. You know, there's a lot of strategy that goes into positioning there.
Yeah, and it's a lot of sitting on and the same thing, you know, a lot of looking over their shoulders, picking their spots, and then deciding when to go.
Yeah, I mean, also not to backtrack here, but I think if you look, I mean, I think now because of social media and the internet and everything else that's out there and the way that especially pros in Europe are doing things away from the races in order to connect with their fans and their sponsors, and I think that it's a different scene than it was even, you know, 5-10 years ago when you saw a lot of top cross-country pros leave mountain biking and go to the road. And again, it's the same thing. Like, they left because it's like, hey, we're top athletes, and that's where the
Cadell Evans.
I mean, he's not the only one. I mean, you have
Trek guy who doped
Roland Green.
Wait, other guy.
No, the Canadian.
Rider.
Yeah.
I mean, you have guys like Jacob, like Jakob Fuglsang.
Yeah.
I mean, still racing, you know, at Astana. I mean, same thing. I mean, those guys, they left because that's where the opportunities were.
Nino's even dabbed in it a couple times.
Yeah, he raced Tour de Suisse with, you know, with Orica like a year or two ago. And then, same bike sponsor. So.
And then Sagan went the other way.
Yeah. True.
Okay, here's something that I can ask you all, because I think it brings up an interesting point, because especially after this will tie in cyclocross and mountain biking. After the Olympic race with Sagan, where he was sort of in there mixing it up before he triple flatted and you know, took himself out of the race, the talk was like, oh, I know all the mountain bike people are going to say that it's just the way he rode his bike and that's why he got those flats, and then it wasn't just bad luck. And I think some people were buying that. Some people were saying, no, it takes a certain amount of skill to be able to ride those lines smoothly. Fast forward to Bales and the Cyclocross World Championship, where you have Wout Van Aert, who seemed, despite the green tires, just seems to be taking different lines than everyone else, being able to ride it more smoothly and not flat compared to somebody like Vanderpool and the rest of the field, who are just getting flat after flat after flat. If we go back and look at that Olympic race now through the lenses of the Cyclocross World Championships, should we look at it any differently?
I mean, I was impressed because the dude went from like literally staging 61st to like third.
No, the start was brilliant.
The start was amazing.
And if you go back, and that is where I'll give Sagan all the credit in the world. I'm not one of these people that was like, oh, I don't want him in there because this should be just for people who mountain bike. I thought it was awesome he was there. I thought it was awesome that everybody that loves him actually watched the mountain bike race and saw how exciting it is. And hopefully some of those people are listening now and know that they can get back into it. But the start that he was staged in the last row and then put himself in the row behind the last row so that he could get that running start into it and just crush through all those dudes who were getting into their race and then blew up to third place was, yeah, that was awesome. That was the best part.
Because, I mean, I think a traditional World Cup race, if you're not in the top three rows, you're never going to see the front of the race.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could have landed a plane in that starting grid.
Yeah.
It was... But I still think that as talented as he is, you know, that's he was not the smoothest.
I think he probably should have done the road race.
Yeah,
I would have done pretty well.
After he saw Van Aermont win it, he was just like second guessing that decision the whole way. But
I think he had fun doing it, no matter what.
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh.
He got his revenge on GVA yesterday.
Sort of.
Not really. The second jacket.
The jacket on the grassy knoll.
That's even better. Thank you. The jacket on the grassy knoll. There it is.
He crashed.
He did. Yeah. All right, Kevin, let's talk about Eliminator.
Yeah, let's talk about Eliminator.
No, hang on.
Okay.
Are we road tripping to Columbus, Georgia?
We're going to go to Columbus, Ohio. You're going to go visit all your old buddies there.
And then we'll be in the wrong city.
We'll be in the wrong city. Columbus, Georgia gets a World Cup race this year. World Cup XCE.
So if you look at the XCE series, the locations for it are insane. They have races in like the one in like Lebanon. They have them all over. It's crazy.
All right, you're up, Kevin. Tell us what Eliminator is.
Can you describe it in less time than an Eliminator race lasts?
Sure, okay. I have about a minute 30 seconds, I think. So think about an Eliminator race as a four-cross race going downhill, but on flat ground. So essentially, it's a elimination-style race where you have four mountain bikers doing a short course probably that takes no more than, I don't know, 4 minutes. What are the average times on that? They're not long. And they're technical. It's kind of like one lap of a short track almost, I'd say.
Like a short track.
Like a short track, yeah.
But then, so what happens after they run that heat?
So usually it's bracketed, so the top two move forward until you get to the finals. And then you have everyone battle for medals. But they're super intense races because you're either go or no. So it makes it for some really exciting racing.
So Bill, who is the current world champion in the XC Eliminator? I say current because they didn't have one in 2016.
Daniel Federspiel.
Correct. No, that's right. He did win last year. But he's won, I think, two or three times.
I was just looking at YouTube clips, and it's from 2014. One of them is in Russian, and then the one under that, he's the first name that showed up.
There you go.
All right, so everybody go and cheer for Daniel Federspiel.
No, you guys cheer for Paul Vanderploeg.
Yeah.
Okay. So are we going to do this? I think we can do this. We can have we can broadcast from the World Cup race.
There you go.
Yeah, so let's talk about these locations. So
that's what I'm saying. They're insane.
Traditionally, the cross-country eliminator races they happen with the cross-country Olympic courses. So you get all the cross-country racers that probably aren't going to medal in the main race.
Can I tell you a story? Interrupt you for a second just to tell you a story about how I just didn't know what I was stepping into after the three of us had talked and had watched Eliminator races and gone like, hey, man, this is cool. This is really cool. So
I know where this is going.
I was with Trek last summer and, you know, sort of hanging out with the team manager and the mechanics, and they were talking, and they somehow Eliminator had come up in the conversation, and I was like, yeah, I'm that sort of sucks that's gone. And they looked at me like they were going to kill me. Like, how dare I say something that idiotic? How could you actually like Eliminator? And how could you wish that it returns? And the thing was, from their point of view, it was the most awful thing ever. Because it basically tripled their work.
Well, but now they have a guy on the team who wants to race them too.
Yeah, they do. But at least they're all in different things. Because as you were saying, it used to be for starting position, right?
It was you
were basically raced Eliminator, or if you weren't seated, you know, high enough, you could race Eliminator and help your starting position for the cross country race. For the mechanics, it meant being out there at another race day, having destroyed bikes that they had to rebuild and get ready for the cross country race the next day. So they all despised it and were thrilled when it went away.
I'm thrilled it's back.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I thought it was fun.
So I want to know, you have to tell us, you know, when you go to the races, if Anton has a different, you know, if the normal New Zealand cross country champ jersey looks different than the Eliminator one.
I will. Yeah. It's pretty good to already have two national championships, you know, like 3 days into your season.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. First race, new team, new sponsor.
Yeah.
There you go. That's how to do it.
Outstanding.
All right. So are people going to show up to these things? I mean, they're okay, not.
Where are they? Like read them.
Yeah,
read them
let's
off.
Go. Let's go back to locations.
Oh, I just had them. Hold on.
I know there's one in Lebanon.
There's one in Columbus, Georgia. Got, in Italy, we got Volterra. Then we got Columbus, Georgia. Waringham, Belgium, Bangkok, Thailand, Winterberg, Germany, Elpendoorn, Netherlands, Antwerp, Belgium, and Beirut, Lebanon.
The Beirut one's going to be crazy. And they're usually, I mean, they'd like to make them urban, right? I mean, they want a cityscape in there.
This is like the cross country version of those insane, like Red Bull downhill things that they have in cities in South America.
So if you look who's actually organizing them, if you go to a website called citymountainbike.com, they actually are the event organizers for all these. So they're advertising these as like a city race.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy. Now I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be a good field trip, assuming we can make it down there.
Yeah. And you know, if you want to race the race in Georgia, it'll only cost you 25 euros.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. It's actually in euros that you have to pay to race this race.
That's awesome. I probably have can probably find 25 euros at home in some
exchange
glass
rate,
jar.
Exchange rate's not bad right now.
Yeah. So. Go down the street and go to PNC and buy some.
Yeah. 26.67 US dollars.
That's less than a cross race.
Yep.
Yeah. And you could race a World Cup.
And be done in less than 2 minutes.
All right.
That's not a very good return on your investment, though.
Should we just sponsor somebody? Should we have a contest and just sponsor somebody to race? We'll put a Crosshairs racer in there.
All right.
We're going to do that. We're going to sponsor somebody for the World Cup.
Done.
Excellent.
All right. We got anything else we got to talk about? Oh, this is good. This is a good start. We need people to come up with a name for us. What else we got? Anything? What was on that long agenda we had?
We had Cape Epic, but that's a whole nother thing.
Oh, yeah.
That is a whole nother thing.
Maybe we'll
also the first big, Euro cross-country race of the real season was...
Is it a cross-country race?
Sunday.
Cape Epic? Oh, no.
Italian one. And who won that?
Fontana.
Fontana. And who won the women's race? Do you remember?
I looked, and I don't remember... I have it pulled up here.
But yeah, Cape Epic, we're going to have to go back and figure out what to actually talk about with that one, because we had
talk about the Svens.
The Masters races of the Svens, and then you had George and Cadell fretting out in their BMC road kits.
I will say this about about former pros racing Cape Epic before Bill spills another LaCroix.
Thankfully, it's empty this time.
Purito Rodriguez raced. He raced with Jose Hermida.
That's amazing.
But they raced the elite category.
Well, good for them.
As they should have.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Svens who raced Masters.
And finished 40th.
Did Cadell and George win it?
Oh, they won.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was also there's an older age category, which I'm not really sure what it means. It's
Wasn't Brenchens out there racing?
Oh, yeah, they won the... they didn't win. They finished maybe second.
Okay.
But they won a stage.
And Scherter was out there, right? Didn't his team win?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they won one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they won the whole thing.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. With Carl Havey in second with Souser.
Right. So. Yeah. See, and that was the impressive thing there. So we're talking about these, cross country shorter races, and they're out there doing this long stage race. That's what I thought was pretty cool, that those guys showed up for Cape Epic. So you got Scherter and Cole Havey going head to head.
Yeah. He was
day
down
after day.
Nino was down there for a while training ahead of that too, because, it was his Instagram feed, I think for the 3 weeks before it was just, oh, training ride. It's really warm out. It's awesome.
Sounds nice.
I think the most impressive win of all the categories was the mixed category with Denny Risveds and Thomas Frischneck.
Oh, that's a nice team. That's a really nice team.
Also, the Andrei Frischneck, so Tomas Frischneck's son, he raced and with I forget who he raced with another. I think he raced with a Dutch mountain biker, Michel van der Heijden. I think who also races cross.
Yes.
But they did pretty well. They were I don't know.
Yeah, they won a stage.
15. They won a stage, yeah.
The other MVDH.
Yes, correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did pretty well.
Okay, and then the last question for this was top American.
Oh.
No, it was Jeremiah.
It was Jeremiah Bishop, 14th.
Topik Ergon, number 2.
Excellent.
They had two teams in the open race. They finished what, 12th? Is that right? 14th, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
Howard Grotz also there, though.
Well, we have to mention him, the most maligned man on.
Yikes! I hope he doesn't listen to your podcast, Bill, because I'm going to get a lot of shit.
We love Howard Gratz.
Yeah,
we'll make it up to him for the rest of the year. Hopefully, he's over in Europe, racing there, and maybe
we'll get a start chance. I'm going to follow him on all forms of social media right now.
Maybe I'll be able to chat with him there.
Yeah, get him on the show.
Yeah,
or whatever this is.
What kind of racing is happening at Sea Otter? I guess I'll be there too. Oh.
Are they having a cross race again this year?
They are having a cross race.
They should really just have an eliminator.
Because the beard will be there.
Oh, the big beard.
Robert Marion's going to be there. I just actually saw him pop up on their advertising for the Sea Otter cyclocross race.
Fantastic.
I hope Carl Decker shows up on a full squish mountain bike or something.
Didn't he win a couple years like that?
Well, he won the short track race on a road bike one year.
That was
and it
amazing.
Was like the biggest shitstorm ever.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, you know what?
You ride what's going to be fastest.
Ride the most appropriate bike for the race.
Yeah. If you're not going to make it technical.
Yeah. But, yeah, so what are you doing? Tell us about what you're going to be doing at Sea Otter.
Well, I'm going to get there. I think the first big coverage is going to be of the e-bike race. No. Just covering the...
Is Steve Johnson going to be racing that?
It's a fat bike. we're just covering the mountain biking. My mountain biking action. Trying to sort of start off the year for the Trek Factory Racing XC team. I'm excited to be hanging out with those guys once again. I think it's gonna be a fun squad.
It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, Emily Batty, Sergio Montecan, and Anton Cooper.
Yeah, smaller team this year.
Yep,
but
just three.
Pretty good. So. Yeah, I saw that your Kohi, who raced for them last year.
Yep.
Saw he raced the big race in Italy.
Oh, okay.
Yesterday and was like 20th or something.
Ah, sweet. So, yeah. It'll be good, and I'll have more to report on that. And yeah, let us know what you think. Give us your feedback. You can email at feedback@cxairs.com. Call the hotline like Nate did from Rochester, 405-CX-HAIRS. And hit us up on Twitter @CXairs, @CrosshairsRadio, @JTaylorJones, @CXShark. You can do those on Instagram as well. And we'll be back with you soon for the next edition. Anything else we need to add?
No, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, come back here to, you know, keep up to date with Kevin's training for the 111K.
Yeah, we'll definitely
torture on the single speed.
Definitely be getting the Pisgah updates.
Yeah.
111 style. All right.
Ouch.
See y'all next time.
See ya.
Bye.